Welcome to History Here and Now. I'm Thomas, the voice inside your podcast machine, and today is a great day to learn about history. The History Here and Now podcast is dedicated to bringing you great stories from the past, and here we talk about people, places, events, culture, and practically every other facet involved with history. Does that sound complicated? Well, history is just that, complicated, but it doesn't have to be. I'm here to help break things down and make history more fun. Let's get started. If you ever had those computer classes in elementary school in the mid-90s, then you've more than likely played the original survival game, Oregon Trail, on probably your early Microsoft computer. You start in Independence, Missouri with your team of oxen, wagon supplies, ammunition, and pray that at least one member of the company makes it to the Willamette Valley. Now, the dangers facing the game were no less real than in true life. Venomous snakes, disease, harsh weather, accidents, and drowning were all endured by those who braved the Oregon Trail. Simultaneously, another group of pioneers moving west encountered the same struggles, but they were more motivated by religious calling to build a new Zion in the American West. The same group also traveled overland by handcarts rather than the larger, more expensive Conestoga wagons. They were the Mormon pioneers, and they prevailed through hardships more unforgiving than anyone could imagine. Now, in 1847, the new president of the church, following the martyrdom of Joseph Smith Jr., Brigham Young and a vanguard company of pioneers entered the Salt Lake Valley and decreed that a new home for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints was to be built in the valley. Discussions amongst the Quorum of the 12 Apostles and local church leaders declared that saints should make their way to the Salt Lake Valley by whatever means necessary. And between 1848 and 1890, large companies of pioneers were established and made their way across the Great Plains and into the Rocky Mountains. Before railroads ventured into the Utah Territory, the church made a distinctive choice with their travel method, hand carts. Now, the hand carts were, if you sort of picture, if you see like a large square planks held by two long handles with two wheels on the side of them, they were basically as simple as that. They were, as I described, hand carts. Only 10% of pioneers made the long trek by handcarts, though, but they became an iconic symbol of the pioneer resilience, determination, and sheer strength in their journey to the newly established Zion. Now, the year 1856 saw the trek of arguably the two most famous handcart companies in church history, the Willie and Martin companies. Now, if you talk to any member of the church or those who follow the history of the church as well, they will always point to these two companies, the Willie and Martin handcart companies. They have arguably become the two most famous groups of Mormon pioneers making their way to the Salt Lake Valley. Now, three prior companies departed Iowa City in June 1856. They were the Ellsworth, MacArthur, and Bunker. But timing was everything when pioneers were making the great trek across the Great Plains. If you didn't leave by a certain time, you would probably get caught in the mountains in winter with low supplies, and your chances of mortality were much, much higher. Now, due to the long transatlantic communication lines, word did not reach Iowa City that the William Martin companies were still planning to travel that summer. Well, a lot of them hadn't even left England yet. There were many groups of converts that were coming over from Great Britain at that time, from one of the first sets of missionaries sent out in the early days of the church. Now, by the time they arrived in Iowa City, church members frantically assembled handcarts from whatever leftover materials were available and gathered as many provisions as possible. Many urged that the two companies settle down in winter quarters in Nebraska that winter because they were ill-equipped and too far behind schedule to safely make it through the mountains. Church members were limited by the amount of weight they could carry on each cart. Food, blankets, protective gear were all they could carry. So, and this actually makes this makes it even more poignant to them, those who are traveling across the trek, was that you could really only survive on the bare minimum. If it was something that was considered frivolous or something that could be replaced when you got to Salt Lake, it was left behind. Food and clothing was it. Despite the shortcomings, the two companies agreed to strike out for the Salt Lake Valley on July 1856, which was 1 month later than planned. But that month, though, would make a huge difference. What ensued were harsh trials challenging their fortitude, faith, and future in the West. Now, in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, or known by many as more commonly as Mormon Church, an important commandment is keeping a faithful record of the church and its people. Now, since the early days of Joseph Smith Jr.'s ministering work, he wrote about received revelations, religious experience, doctrine, contemporary events, and correspondence with a large number of people. Now, keeping a journal is a common practice in the church and even done even today. And during the course of the westward migrations, the pioneers also kept a record. These journal entries recounted everyday activities, births, deaths, landmarks, and other events that occurred in the company's travels. And I was recently able to obtain a copy of some of these journals, and what I read was really astounding. Like many of those westward moving pioneers, everything starts out great, but by the time they start hitting the mountains, truly unknown territory, things quickly take a turn for the worse. They provide a glimpse into what the pioneers felt about their excursion and how they overcame their obstacles with the help of other company members and their religious conviction. Now, of course, what one can expect when reading these entries as the company enters the mountains in the bitter cold winter, the optimism declines and the desperation really starts to show. Now, moving back to the Willie and Hancock Company's movements, the companies made their way across the long stretches of Nebraska, battling the harsh of summer heat and, of course, taxed by wildlife. When people rejoiced at the sights of significant trail landmarks used by other pioneers, such as Chimney Rock, Scott's Bluff, Fort Laramie, you know, of course, places you should know if you, of course, played Oregon Trail, like I did many times as a kid. Now, William Southwell, the Martin Company, writes this account when they arrived in sight of Chimney Rock, quote, "This was an ideal place, plenty of grass, plenty of wood, and all the requisites of a good camp. We were now on the side where the former Chimney Rock stands, and it was a great sight. A sight that once seen is never forgotten. It stands in the Laramie Plains and is visible 100 miles. Now, that all sounds well and good, but unfortunately for members of the LDS Church, prejudices always follow them no matter where they went, whether they were facing them in New York or in Missouri or in Illinois. Everything negative followed them. The prejudices faced by the Saints back east follow them west. Other pioneers harassed them for food, livestock, weapons, and military outposts meant to have stockpile supplies were either sold out or they refused outright to sell anything to the impoverished companies of Saints. And then when the first wave of snowstorms hit the Saints, they ventured into Wyoming, crossing the Platte River for the final time. And beginning in October, this is finally when the real tragedy begins to unfold. Elizabeth Horks Jackson, another member of the Martin Company, writes in her journal entry, quote, "We had scarcely crossed the river when we were visited with a tremendous storm of snow, hail, sand, and fierce winds. It was a terrible storm from which both the people and teams suffered. After crossing the river, my husband was put on a handcart and hauled into camp, and indeed, after that time, he was unable to walk. And consequently, provision had to be made for him to ride in a wagon. And from this time, my worst experience commenced." Now, church historians will tell you that the lowest point of the Saints' westward migration was when they came to Martin's Cove in the winter of 1856. Almost every member of the church I've talked to always points out Martin's Cove. This was the real low point. By this stage, many members of the company were starving and racked with illness. Their daily rations were reduced to only a handful amount of flour every day, and many substituted by chewing on almost anything that they could, whether it was leather or grass or even things like tree bark. You know, tree bark that was probably left off the green wood that they used to build these hand carts. Because remember, you know, the original companies that left in June didn't think they were going to make it. And so all the wood they were using was green and not of the best quality. And, you know, the Saints are desperately just trying to keep anything to sustain themselves. And imagine eating only a handful amount of flour every day. Now, some of the members of the company did substitute it by going out hunting, but it still wasn't enough. Winter had come with a vengeance in the mountains, and many lives were claimed. John Kirkman of the Martin Company aptly summarizes the Martin Cove experience by saying, quote, "Death had taken a heavy toll. The ravine was like an overcrowded tomb. No mortal pen could describe the suffering." Now, despite the hardships, the companies were not completely without hope. Church President Brigham Young knew of their impending arrival, and he dispatched a network of scouts carrying supplies to reach the pioneers within a few days of Salt Lake. So, and as, of course, many church members will tell you if they know the stories, these scouts were quite literally met or received as delivering angels. They were the bringers of hope. Wagon trains were filled with rations and blankets and other items sent to the struggling companies, and they were absolute godsends. Not only did they bring material relief, but they shepherded spiritual relief also as a sign that their journey was coming to an end. Now John Chislett of the Willie Company writes, quote, "As we were resting for a short time at noon, a light wagon was driven into our camp from the west. Its occupants were Joseph A. Young and Stephen Taylor. They informed us that the train of supplies was on the way and we might expect to meet it in a day or two. More welcome messengers never came from the courts of glory than these two young men were to us. They lost no time after encouraging us all that they could press forward, but sped on further east to convey their glad news to Edward Martin at the 5th Handcart Company, who left Florence about 2 weeks after us. And it was who feared them worse off than we were. They, when from our view, many a hearty God bless you followed them." Now, one of the rescuers, members of these scouts, Ephraim K. Hanks, writes, quote, "I reached the ill-fated train just as the immigrants were camping for the night. The sight that met my gaze as I entered their camp can ever be erased from my memory. The starved forms and haggard countenances of the poor sufferers as they moved slowly, shivering with cold, to prepare their scanty evening meal was enough to touch the stoutest heart. When I saw the terrible condition of the immigrants on first entering their camp, my heart almost melted within me. I rose up in my saddle, and I tried to speak cheering and comforting words to them. I told them also that they all should have the privilege to ride into Salt Lake City as more teams were coming," end quote. On November 30th, 1856, the last of the William Martin companies made it into Salt Lake City. Over 200 people died en route to the valley, and many more arrived half-starved with nothing more than their handcarts and the clothes they were wearing. They were warmly welcomed by the Saints and had their stories recorded for posterity for church history. Now, 5 more companies were traversed the plains by 1860 before the outbreak of the Civil War. And with guerrilla warfare ravaging the West, it was not the most ideal time to then travel. You know, many Saints companies had to pause for a while as, you know, more and more tragedies and conflicts were breaking out during the Civil War period. Now, with the completion of the first transcontinental railroad in 1869, the era of wagons and handcarts ended. Historians and church leaders still debate on the fundamental planning and policies of the handcart companies, whether or not they were truly prepared, and if more deaths could have been avoided. What remains strong, though, is the resilient spirit and fortitude of the pioneers who pushed their way to a new homeland beyond the mountains and made a new Zion on earth. The American West historian Wallace Stegner memorializes their convictions by stating, quote, "Perhaps their suffering seems less dramatic because the Hancock pioneers bore it meekly, praising God, instead of fighting for life with the ferocity of animals and eating their dead to keep their own life beating, as both the Fremont and Donner parties did. But if courage and endurance make a story, if human kindness and helpfulness and brotherly love in the midst of raw horror are worth recording, This half-forgotten episode of the Mormon Migration is one of the great tales of the West and of America. Now, I really hope you enjoyed that story. History Here and Now is a website dedicated to the research and writing about different historical topics. And if you liked this podcast, hit the like button, share it on social media, recommend it to your friends, families, and colleagues, and anyone you think would enjoy hearing a good history discussion. You can follow History Here and Now on Twitter and check back periodically for the next episode. Until then, good luck, and we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening. Thank you.